Hey everybody, this is Devin.
And her faithful sidekick, Kate.
Welcome to Med Crimes.
The first couple days of September, which is also to me the first couple days of like Halloween and
fall. Guess what? Our pod lab is in Kate's basement. We've been talking about this for a year now, almost. We started our podcast last year, right after Halloween. And so I've been staring at these pumpkins in the basement all year long.
It's where I keep my pumpkins.
Kate's getting all set up doing the techno stuff. And me, I finally go over to the shelves and I pull out the pumpkins.
She's decorating the pod lab with actual pumpkins.
I'm currently sitting next to, I call him Johnny. Kate calls him Spookly.
Yeah, well, my kids named them Spookly after a cartoon they like.
So we've got some decor in the pod lab.
It's looking very fallicious in here.
Mm-hmm. Spirit of my soul. Who else loves it?
I know.
Yeah.
I know you all love it, too, because we're all kindred spirits, obviously.
We are. And our woodland creatures.
I know.
Speaking of all our woodland creatures, we have some new Patreons this week.
We sure do. We have Danielle W.
Ooh, welcome, Danielle W.
W is for winner.
Danielle the Danielle Woodland Creature.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Danielle's also a woodland creature. Mm-hmm. Okay. We also have Kate Kager.
Ooh.
Kate with a C, which is like definitely the sexier way to spell it.
Okay, so it's not like KK, like, you know, no. Again, the Kardashians that I always bring up.
She loves the Kardashians. Sorry, no, it's people. Kate with a C because she's very fancy.
So that's, yeah, cool. Yeah.
And we also have Kara D. Rogers.
Welcome, Kara D.
Thank you, all of you guys.
Oh, all of you, welcome to our precious little family.
I know. You guys are like cute little fairies dancing around in the grass, in the woods.
With the leaves falling because it's September.
Yeah, and you all have very fall vibes to you, which is really exciting.
Makes me love you more.
I know. Thank you. Welcome to our family.
Yay.
We love you.
Growing.
Thank you. So, where we left off, we had talked about Dr. H.H. Holmes. And
we kind of had, like, we were talking about his Death Mansion? Is that what it was called? Murder Mansion?
Nope, Murder Castle.
Murder Castle. That's what it was.
I kind of like Death Mansion better, though.
Yeah.
To tell you the truth.
And there was the Stairway to Nowhere.
Yes.
And the trying to make the, what was it? About the giants?
Oh, right? Yeah. Like, he what was said that? He wanted to create a race of giants.
Yes.
Which,
what a freak.
He had like one of those stretchy torture machines in his basement. And it's like, that's not how you create giants. And I feel like you know that.
And so he's a doctor for a refresher because he's an anatomist in the 1880s, 1890s.
Right. And he primarily worked in pharmacies and was essentially a pharmacist, mixed drugs and compounded things, but never was a practicing physician.
I feel like he must have taken some of these drugs.
Oh, he definitely did. Remember we talked about him ordering like 10 gallons of chloroform every week? Yes.
See, guys, I hope this was a good refresher for you because I needed a little bit.
Devin needed a
minute.
Do
remember being heavily exhausted the last episode that we did.
It was a long
thing. And this time we're recording in the morning during the first week of school.
We're sipping coffee.
So we're sipping on coffee. There's no kiddos around. Everybody's happily off doing their daily things.
I mean, it's good stuff.
Yeah.
What are you going to do?
We're ready to go.
We're ready to fire you guys up.
Do it.
All right. So essentially, the moment that we left off with Holmes is when he had, per his confessions, murdered his mistress, Julia, along with her little girl, Pearl.
Yes. Oh, I remember Pearl. I loved that name. I know.
Yeah. And reportedly, all because she was pregnant with his child.
Bastard.
And what he had said happened is that he took her downstairs for an abortion, but had given her chloroform to sedate her and had administered a fatal dose. And he had done the same to Pearl, the little girl.
Maybe he shouldn't have bought so much chloroform.
I mean, maybe.
Maybe.
He was trying to be a little bit too gung-ho with it, I feel like. He had also constructed this elaborate murder castle, which is what it had has become known as, and was carrying out all of these, you know, heinous acts within. And you know, the Chicago World's Fair is like upon us. There's a lot of travelers staying at his hotel, renters and employees, particularly young female employees and travelers who are being seen entering the castle and never being seen again.
You go in, you don't come out.
You go in and you don't come out.
That needs to be a sign on the front door.
Kind of. Like, warning. Just FYI, a lot of people, like pretty warning. Young girls, go missing when they enter here. So you might want to find other accommodations. I'm just saying.
No vacancy for the ugly.
No vacancy. All right. So now we're going to start off with this other young woman by the name of Emmeline Segrand. And she was an employee of Holmes's beginning in 1892. And she reportedly was just this beautiful, gorgeous young lady. Like, she was blonde. She had these gorgeous blue eyes. And Holmes himself later admitted to having been totally struck by how gorgeous she was. And being the ladies' man that he is, he convinced her, you know, when they met sort of randomly, to come and work with him in his castle. So I keep calling
come
it
work
the castle.
In my castle.
I call it the castle. What it really was there's retail
the hotel
space below
with the pharmacy.
There's a hotel room. I'm sorry. There's apartments on the second floor, hotel rooms on the third. That's what this really was. But it has become known as the murder castle. So the two, you know, neighbors are starting to notice that the two are getting very friendly and, in fact, would start, like, visiting each other in each other's rooms. And she, at first, did not live at the hotel. Mm-hmm. She lived off, and she came to work every day, but she did not live in his area. But the two were seen getting together at her house, and also she was seen entering and exiting his apartment in the murder castle.
One of the few who got to exit.
Yeah, exactly. Now, he reportedly also had borrowed money from her that she had earned from working as a typewriter prior to her job here. Like, she had like $800 to her name. It was like her life savings.
And he just, like, I'm gonna take that.
He's so manipulative that everyone just, you know, believes him and trusts him. He's got one of those charismatic ways about him that a lot of these serial killers do, and they just manipulate their way, you know, into these crazy situations. And he is knee deep in it. He's got a lot of creditors after him. He's borrowing
he's
from
not paying
Peter.
Anyone back.
He's borrowing from Peter to pay back Paul, and it's snowballing at this point. So the two then started, like, doing activities together, and he was, like, very taken by her. This was, like, different. And remember, he's still married to a couple of people. He's married to Murda.
Some are dead.
He is still married to Clara. Mm. And so the two were, you know, really taken by each other. They went out to eat together, and they even took music lessons together at one point, which is like a cute little couple thing to do.
If you're not a murderer.
If you're not a murderer, it's cute, but yeah, just don't murder people. So then neighbors and other employees there started, like, talking with Emmeline about Holmes and his, like, shifty business practices. And neighbors that lived in the building reported that while in conversation with her, she would often ask, hey, what do you guys think about H.H. Holmes? Like, what do you think about him? Do you think he's a good guy? This was like a couple months after they started, like, sort of seeing each other.
No, I do not.
And the neighbors all had opinions about how, well, I think he uses people. He owes a lot of people a lot of money. He's pretty shady. He's got a reputation for being shady.
Did anyone have a good thing to say?
Not really. No. Yeah. And they later told her, you know, he's a wicked womanizer, and just, like, stay away from him. And she would seem to agree. She'd be like, yeah, I'm kind of getting that sense. So it seemed like she was really forming this different opinion about him. Her opinion was changing about him. So I'm wondering if that's what sort of led to what culminated here. Now, just shortly after that, in early December of that year, Emmeline vanishes. And her co-workers are asking Holmes, hey, where's Emmeline? Knowing that the two were sort of seeing each other and know each other really well. And he would be very short with everybody and say, oh, well, she ran off to get married to some guy. Now, of note, a neighbor saw him 2 days later with some workers in the building moving a large trunk out of his apartment
down
the stairs.
With other people?
Oh, yeah.
Do you think they knew it was inside?
I have no idea if they did or not. I don't know.
Fishy.
Days later, Holmes presented an envelope containing a marriage announcement seemingly addressed from Emmeline herself. It read,
"Bullshit.
Mr. Robert E. Phelps, Miss Emmeline Segrand, married Wednesday, December 7th, 1892. And this was signed physically by Emmeline as well. Unmistakably her signature.
Really?
Yeah. Physically signed. Chicago, Illinois. Now, the other side read, Mr. and Mrs. Robert E. Phelps. And there were a bunch of these that went out. One went out to her family, some of her friends, like her siblings all got one. Some of the other employees here got one. And her parents had actually contacted Holmes when they were looking for Emmeline because they too had received one of these announcements. And Holmes had told her parents that he knew very little about this Phelps guy other than he was a traveling man. And historians have actually looked into this, and as far as anyone can tell, there is no record of anyone in the area or anyone that had traveled through the area by the name of Robert E. Phelps.
Which I believe.
Oh, yeah. 100%.
What did she think she was signing if it's unmistakably her signature?
Exactly. So I'll get to that. So witnesses later revealed that Holmes was trying to track Emmeline down prior to her disappearing and reminding another employee to have Emmeline sign this stack of envelopes and address them that I'm going to put on her desk. She has to do this. She has to sign all these papers and she has to hand address all of these envelopes, a whole bunch of different ones. And he said, please remind her to do that. So as it seems, he then had them printed after she had signed those papers and addressed those envelopes. Mm-hmm. And obviously this was in preparation to stage her running off with someone.
Yeah.
In preparation for getting rid of her permanently.
Premeditated pre-planning.
Exactly. Which is like so heartbreaking.
Malicious.
Exactly. Exactly. So then in 1893, so this is the beginning of 1893, this whole thing with Emmeline had occurred in December of 1892. In 1893, he encounters a woman named Minnie Williams, who had just moved to Chicago. She was an aspiring actress, and the two had actually met some time ago back in Boston. So when they re-encountered each other, they kind of like hit it off right away. Mm-hmm. And she was traveling through Chicago with her sister, Annie. And I have like a frog in my throat all of a sudden.
Ribbit.
I'm not trying to be mean or speak ill of the dead here, but from witness accounts of people who were close to the Williams sisters, they had said the two, quote, didn't know a lot, end quote. So
I'm sorry, what?
I think what they're trying to say is that they were kind of simple, impressionable.
Got it.
Like, not
yep.
maybe, you know, not maybe the sharpest.
The simple.
Exactly.
Once you said simple,
just
yeah.
simple is mm-hmm. good. So Holmes obviously picked up on this very quickly and used it to his advantage. So
I can work with that.
Yeah, exactly. You're mm-hmm. a human being with a pulse and I can make you do what I want. So
and take your money.
I can use
Whatever
you somehow.
Got.
Exactly. So he offered Minnie a job at his hotel as his personal stenographer, and she, of course, accepted. And Holmes persuaded Williams to then transfer the deed of all of her property that she owned down in Texas, in Fort Worth, Texas, to a man named Alexander Bond. Alexander Bond was one of Holmes's aliases.
Oh.
So somehow he manipulated this lady to just give him all of her property in Fort Worth.
For who knows what?
Who the
reason.
Hell knows what?
I'll sign it over to you.
Exactly. Now, the next month, Holmes and Williams, presenting themselves as husband and wife, rent an apartment in Chicago's Lincoln Park. Minnie's sister Annie then came to visit, and in July, she wrote to her aunt that she planned to accompany, quote, Brother Harry, end quote, on this big trip to Europe. And after that, neither Minnie or Annie were seen alive or heard from. And this is after early, mid-1893. He's awful, isn't he?
He sucks.
Oh, it gets worse. So during his later confessions, Holmes admitted to having killed them both, Minnie first, followed by her sister, by luring them individually into the safe. Do you remember when I told you about the safe in his office?
With like gas stripping in, right?
So he closed it up and pumped it full of gas, and he admitted to having opened the little viewing portal and watched them both suffocate and die slowly. He's the worst. He's literally the worst. So Holmes, you know, the wheels are starting to turn here a little bit more. He's starting to think of other ways where he could get, you know, a bigger payout. Because remember, he's this shady guy. He's got a lot of people after him. And he owes money to literally everyone in town. And
he owes me money.
He owes our ancestors.
I've been waiting
money.
A century for this.
Guy owes me $12. That was a lot back then. He had set up like several aliases too. And he had taken out a bunch of loans in like fake names. And so when he's borrowing from someone, he's paying off somebody else who's like literally about to go strangle him. And it's all to just like cover his tracks, but it's not getting any better for him in the long run because he's just creating these new debts, these new lies. And a lot of what he's doing here at this point is like putting out all of his own fires, right? Because one scheme is always leading to another scheme, and he would rip off someone to pay off one debt just to owe another. Like, I think that he must have really enjoyed that consistent feeling of just, like, just getting away with it. You know what I mean? Like, right. That excitement and the rush of having everything almost falling to pieces at any given moment. Mm-hmm. And then when he's able to swindle his way into buying himself more time, it's like, oh, phew. He gets that, like, smug satisfaction, you know?
Yep.
And I think that smugness and that satisfaction is a lot of why he made a lot of false confessions, too, at the end of this.
Because he wanted to make himself sound better.
Exactly.
More
notorious, you know, more.
It just makes you an ass.
It really does.
That's all.
So it occurred to him that he could take a massive insurance policy out on the murder castle. And he could then set fire to the structure and collect one of his biggest payouts yet. So in August of 1893, witnesses say they saw Holmes moving furniture out of the third floor during the days preceding the fire. And he also reportedly took out all of the valuable fixtures, like the brass knobs, the locks, the light fixtures.
Because that's not suspicious.
No. He also took, like, the marble countertops, like the marble basins, like anything he could hawk for
money.
That
was money, yeah.
Yeah. And then nights later, the blaze went up, and residents reported, like, this overwhelming stench of, like, burning wood and burning tar because the roof was melting.
Yeah.
And the entire third floor had gone up in a blaze. And it was just, at first, this was the first fire. There's a couple of different fires. The first fire guts the entire third floor.
Yeah.
The structure was left standing initially. And the second and first floors were both still usable. So they continued operations.
That way he could still rake some money in from retail.
Exactly.
But get his insurance claim.
Can't kill the retail business, right? So investigators found that it was set with the use of an accelerant or incendiary device. So it was automatically flagged as a suspicious arson fire.
And got no money, right?
Well, so when investigators started really taking a better look at Holmes himself, because he was very suspicious to have set the fire, he was known in the town as being a swindler, and he was known to take out insurance policies and take out loans.
On people that aren't dead.
Exactly. And so he was known for doing this. And so they knew that he would be getting a big insurance payout on the loss of the third floor of the building. And the insurance company, in fact, reached out and contacted investigators themselves because they were suspecting that Holmes was connected and wanted to prosecute for arson if he was found to be connected. So,
and insurance fraud.
Exactly. And in addition, people were starting to get reported missing from time to time, and it was all starting to get connected to this murder castle. So the primary investigator's name on the case was George Chamberlain, and he wasn't the only one, but he sort of led the investigation through the arrest. He had a lot of work to do, though, because before he could, like, prove that he was involved in the arson and like, he was able to actually connect all these disappearances physically. Like, there was a lot of work to be done. But you're going to see how incredibly difficult his work was because things get a lot more complicated for like Holmes and what he ends up doing to try to evade arrest and evade prosecution is like crazy. And it's insane that in this time they are able to track him through everywhere that he went and all the fake names. I mean, all they have, they don't have CCTV. They don't have cell phone towers. They don't have
databases to connect the...
All they have is eyewitnesses. Hmm. That's all they have. And it's crazy that they were able to build this case and connect everything to him. It's very impressive, honestly. Better police work back then than we have today a lot of the times. Hmm. I'm telling you, it's crazy. There were a total of six that had sort of vanished between 1891 and 1895. And it wasn't proven that he was connected to these, but Holmes himself was suspected of killing these folks. And also he admitted to killing all six of them. So Dr. Rustler was the name of one of them. He had actually had an office in the castle. He had gone missing in 1892. There was another one by the name of Kitty Kelly, a stenographer for Holmes, who also went missing in 1892. A John G. Davis of Greenville, Pennsylvania, who went to visit the 1893 World's Fair and had vanished completely. Henry Walker of Greensburg, Indiana, who also went missing in November of 1893, was alleged to have insured his life to Holmes for $20,000 and wrote to his friends that he was working for Holmes in Chicago and then vanished. Yep, completely disappeared.
And how many of these people disappeared right after signing their properties and fortunes and whatever else?
Probably so many. Mm-hmm. And it's probably impossible to know for sure, you know, everything, because he had so many aliases and like he's having people transfer property to people's names that we probably haven't even been able to connect to him yet. You know what I mean? It's crazy. And then lastly, there was Milford Cole of Baltimore, Maryland, who was alleged to have disappeared after receiving a telegram from Holmes to come to Chicago in July of 1894. And then there's another unknown victim who also disappeared, Lucy Burbank. And she is somebody who just disappeared. They weren't able to really connect her to Holmes, but other than the fact that her bank book was found within the murder castle in 1895. Hmm. So that seemed a little mm-hmm. suspicious. So all these people, you know, may be connected, may not be, but it's kind of suspicious because it was in his active sort of operating mm-hmm. time. And mm-hmm. also he admitted to that. So in July of 1894, Holmes was arrested and briefly jailed for the first time on the charge of selling mortgaged goods in St. Louis, Missouri. He was very shortly after bailed out. Like, I think he only literally spent days in jail.
Swindled his way out, I'm sure.
Exactly. I'm sure he manipulated someone or got money from somewhere. So we are now going to talk about Benjamin Peitzel. He and his family become very, very important to this part of the story. Now, Benjamin Peitzel and H.H. Holmes met during the World's Fair, where Peitzel was actually an exhibitor. Because remember, the World's Fair, there's a lot of exhibitors there, the people that are inventing stuff. You know? So he had actually invented a sort of coal bin that he was being praised for, like a really new fancy coal bin, apparently. And so he was doing great there. But the two had sort of met and connected during the World's Fair. The two became really close. Peitzel was actually a carpenter by trade and did some work on the building for Holmes as well. He sort of recruited him to do some finishing work there. So I want you to picture a guy. Peitzel is like a little on the simple side. He's kind of like a sniveling little man who like hung out with Holmes because Holmes was very suave and cool and good looking, and he seemingly had everything, and Benjamin just wanted like a piece of that.
Want to be like him.
Exactly. So he ended up getting, Holmes ended up getting close with Benjamin's family as well. They all kind of hung out. He had a wife named Carrie and five children. Aww. Okay. So they were buddies for like a few years, and Peitzel became sort of an accomplice to some of Holmes's schemes, and he would help him, and Holmes would give him like a cut of whatever it is that they had earned. So, you know, he didn't have the best of intentions either.
He's a sidekick.
Exactly. And it's unknown if he knew or participated in any actual murders, but he did co-manage a lot of the insurance fraud stuff and a lot of like the shady business stuff that they did. So with the insurance payout from the fire all tied up, again, the insurance company is suspicious. They're He's being investigated. It. He's not gotten any funds with that.
Good.
Holmes concocts this new scheme. He's going back to his roots, taking out life insurance policies, faking deaths, and collecting the payouts and splitting the profit. So he talks Benjamin Peitzel into participating in this. Now, what they had agreed on was that Peitzel would fake his own death after taking out an insurance policy in his name. The beneficiary on the policy would be his wife, Carrie. But for helping them orchestrate all of the stuff, they would then split the payout with Holmes. So the plan was to carry this out in a different city because everybody was so suspicious of Holmes's activity in Chicago that anything like this would raise a lot of red flags. No insurance company would ever pay that out.
So what did this guy do with his wife and children?
Oh, hold on. So they used a new insurance company and they planned this all to occur in Philadelphia. So he's in an entire new city. And all the everybody locally was catching on to their shenanigans. So they go to Philadelphia. He leaves his wife and kids. He says, you know, I'm going to hide out for a while so that nobody gets suspicious, but then I'm going to come back. And you and I and the kids are all going to move to a new city. We're going to have all this money. It's going to be a great situation, right?
Liar!
So they go to Philadelphia. The plan was for Peitzel to set up this lab in Philadelphia and sort of build this persona over a period of weeks of him being an inventor, right? And the plan was for something to go terribly wrong in his lab and for there to be a fire or explosion, which would then kill Peitzel and disfigure him beyond recognition. And an issue came up, however, when Holmes did not have the resources in Philadelphia or the familiarity to find a corpse that fit his basic description enough to be identifiable as Peitzel.
I'm sorry.
This is, it's so absurd.
Like, dude, we moved to a new city. I don't know who looks like you when you're dead. Like,
well, it doesn't need to even look like him. It just needs to be like burned beyond recognition and disfigured. But he needs to have the same general size. So that he ran into like sort of a problem that he did not anticipate. Minor complication. So the next logical step, according to Holmes.
Of course, because all of this is logical.
Was to murder his friend.
No.
Uh-huh. So he goes to the lab where Peitzel is all set up.
I'm just going
to
do it.
He's like, whatever. I'm not going to fake it anymore. I'm just going to do it. So he knocks him unconscious and he chloroforms him. According to his confession, Peitzel was still alive after being chloroformed. And Holmes then set him on fire using a chemical accelerant called benzene. And he made sure to pour some on his face so as to burn and disfigure his face severely.
Why?
Because for insurance reasons, his family will need to come and identify the body. So Clara is in on this. She is not thinking that she's going to go and actually see her husband. She just needs to go and lay eyes on this disfigured body and say, yep, that's my husband. But if she sees her actual husband,
really her husband,
she's going to know that Holmes killed him.
Word.
How ridiculous is this? Doesn't this get, it gets so,
all the puzzle pieces,
dude, it gets crazier.
Wait, he goes after Claire for the other half of the money, doesn't he?
Hold on, listen, calm it on down.
I'm doing the thing that I do.
You're doing the thing I'm that doing you the do thing, but it's only because this is such a crazy story. So Carrie Peitzel, his wife, you know, she says, you know, I'm so distraught, I can't personally go and identify him when the insurance company requests that. So what she actually does is she sends her eldest daughter, who was 14 at the time, to identify Peitzel.
Yeah, because that's something that you should do.
You know, parenting in this day is very questionable.
I mean, I know at like 14, they like marry off their young daughters like in that time period, right? And go ahead and you go get married off and have your own babies. But
she's basically an adult at this
point. So yeah, go ahead and tell me that your father's dead. I can't do that. I'm too distraught.
There's a lot more questionable parenting coming up here. So Yes, there's a lot. This gets pretty rough.
This story just took a turn.
Oh, it's insane. It's ridiculous.
It took a turn.
So she sends her daughter to identify Peitzel. He was so disfigured, and therefore Carrie was obviously unaware that it was actually her husband and not just the decoy cadaver that they had agreed upon. She's still under the impression that her husband is alive and just hiding out somewhere, right? So she collects the insurance payout. She gives half to Holmes. I don't know what happens next in terms of what Holmes had to say to manipulate Carrie into agreeing to this next part.
What?
But he works some kind of sorcery on Carrie. Remember, she trusts Holmes. They have known each other now for a couple of years. He convinces Carrie to allow her three middle children, Alice, Nellie, and Howard, to come away with him to travel around the country.
What? With this dude that's, like, known mm-hmm. for fraud and murdering and...
You know, he reminded her that she was now this, like, quote-unquote single mom, and that he could pay the kids' way and relieve her of the financial burden while he was traveling with them. Lord only knows, again, exactly what he said to her to convince him to be able to take her three middle children with him.
Do they ever come back?
Stay tuned.
I don't want to. I want to know now.
I know. So what was really going on is that he was again trying to put out a fire. Like, remember, he had killed Peitzel, and he knew it was only a matter of time before Carrie was going to figure out that her husband was not actually going to come back.
Yeah.
And that she couldn't contact him. And so, I mean, this was something that was going to fall apart pretty quickly if mm-hmm. he didn't act fast. And he also knew that his lies would only cover up so much. So
instead of just leaving, let me take your kids.
Yeah. So this is what he did. He started to plan the systematic murder of everyone in the Peitzel family to cover up his murder of Benjamin Peitzel.
Oh, my.
How ridiculous. How insane. So this next segment is very upsetting. Trigger warning, because it does involve something very bad happening to children.
I am triggered.
Okay, Devin's triggered. So maybe just fast forward the next 30 seconds if you're not into
that. But she's going to make me listen to it anyway.
Yep. So over a period of weeks, Holmes travels with the three children to several cities, including Philadelphia, Denver, St. Louis, ultimately into Toronto and throughout a couple of different cities in Canada. Each location, he would typically rent a property, never staying there too long. He would use a number of aliases while renting these properties and using aliases for all the kids as well. Witnesses said he would refer to the kids as his nieces and nephew, and at one point he referred to them as his own children, presumably to remain difficult to reach to Carrie, who was already asking about when Benjamin was coming home and how were the kids, and already trying to figure out what was going on. Now, he continues to tell Carrie that Benjamin is jumping city to city and that he's spending some time hiding out in London as well, and he's just being overly cautious about returning so as not to tip off authorities or the insurance company. He would say, this week he's in St. Louis, or now he's in Detroit, and now he's in mm-hmm. London. Like, it was always in a different spot, always moving somewhere. So you can kind of tell by his actions
was
here.
Was Carrie like, why do you get to know where he is
and not I don't me? Get to? Yeah. See, that would be a red flag to me. I'm sure at this point it's a red flag to Carrie too, because she keeps asking. Mm-hmm. But she's like, you know, I trust this guy. Like, I've got my kids with him. You know, it's such a situation, dude. It's crazy. So ultimately, Holmes ends up staying in a rental house in Toronto with the three of the five Peitzel kids. It was in this rental home in Toronto that two of the three Peitzel children were murdered by Holmes. He killed the two girls by locking them in a trunk, drilling a hole and feeding a gas line into the trunk, suffocating them both to death. He then buried their nude bodies in the dirt basement of the Toronto home. Holmes then took the youngest Peitzel boy, Howard, to Indianapolis, where he rented a different cottage. He purchased drugs at a local drugstore, I'm not sure which ones, to kill little Howard, and confessed to having dismembered the body before burning him. Investigators later found parts of his body in the chimney of the home.
Oh, my God.
Like teeth and hair. Isn't that awful? It's so incredibly sad. I just can't even. So this is the what I was referring to when I was like, hats off to investigators, because this was so hard for them to track. Again,
you're in Toronto, you're
out of the country.
Yeah.
You're in so many different cities. And like, they were able to pinpoint, I think, at least most of the places they had been on eyewitness accounts only. Wow. It's crazy. Now, at one point, things are really heating up in the investigation. Now, police are actively chasing him at this time. They don't yet know about the kids, but they're collecting circumstantial evidence of the missing people in Chicago, the stealing, the fraud, the insurance scams, and the arson. They're pretty convinced at this point that he was behind that. Now, Holmes was finally tracked by investigators to Philadelphia, where he was arrested with no kids in sight. So, November 17th of 1894...
Poor Carrie.
Right?
Yeah.
Isn't that so upsetting? And what they had arrested him for and formally charged him for, because they were collecting the circumstantial stuff, like to try to connect him to the murders and the arson, what they charged him for was insurance fraud and horse theft. Those were his warrants. Because they were terrified that he was just going to go somewhere else. This guy mm-hmm. was everywhere. They mm-hmm. finally had him back. They finally had him. Mm-hmm. And they were like, you need to stay where you are for a minute so that we can figure out what we need to do next. Yeah, exactly. So he's arrested and brought back to Chicago. Now, there, Carrie is waiting for him. She's been in contact with the police. And she asks, first, where's my husband? Holmes says, oh, well, he's traveling around. I don't know where he is. I think mm-hmm. he's in London. When investigators confront him about no one hearing or seeing Peitzel, he confesses to murdering him. Carrie then asks where her three children are.
Oh, no.
Holmes does not give a straight answer and makes something up about how they got separated in their travels. But shortly after that, in October of 1895, the homeowner of that Toronto rental property made a grisly discovery in his basement, where the bodies of the two Peitzel girls were uncovered. Holmes was immediately charged with the murder of Benjamin Peitzel, as well as the murders of the three children. Another fire breaks out in the murder castle in August of 1895, and it guts the remainder of the castle. The building still stood, but the inside was completely decimated. Everything was destroyed beyond any sort of recognition. Witnesses report that they saw two men entering the building very late at night, the night prior to the blaze going up. Now, at this point, Holmes himself was in prison, but it would have been pretty easy for him to, like, pay somebody or a couple of people to do this, in theory. So it's speculated that that's what happened, but not proven. They could never connect him to burning the building down at this point. Now, the building itself remains standing, and at one point it was renovated, but it was ultimately torn down years later, and it's been occupied by a couple of different things. Currently occupying its space is the Englewood branch of the U.S. Post Office, interestingly enough.
Oh, lovely.
In October of 1895, Holmes was put on trial for the murder of Benjamin Peitzel and was found guilty and sentenced to death. Thank the Lord.
Yeah.
Now, Holmes confessed to a total of 27 murders.
He is a murdo.
He confessed to a total of 27 murders in Chicago, Indianapolis, and Toronto.
Jesus.
Though, some of the people he confessed to murdering were found to still have been alive.
Yeah. And all those fraudulent ones.
Oh, exactly. And he had 6 attempted murders as well. Holmes was actually paid $7,500 by the Hearst newspapers in exchange for his memoirs and confessions. So
it's thought that... of course he did it because he's a money dude.
Exactly. But I think he also elaborated it to, like, and, like, you know, fantasticalized it a little, mm-hmm. if that's a mm-hmm. word, a little bit more to make it readable. Exactly. Or... and to, like, he wanted to, like, have control over the narrative. Now, while in prison, Holmes had authored an autobiography called Holmes's Own Story. And in it, I'm going to just read a quote here that I felt was interesting. He stated, quote, "I could not help the fact that I was a murderer, no more than the poet could help the inspiration to sing."
Poor baby.
Now, so the case was notorious for its time and received, like, wide publicity, and it was in the international press. I mean, it was everywhere. It was all everybody was talking about. Now, May 7th of 1896, Holmes was hanged at the Philadelphia County Prison for the murder of Benjamin Peitzel and his children. Until the moment of his death, Holmes remained like calm, amiable, showing very few signs of fear and anxiety. I got this. He's like, this is fine. I'm going to find a way out of this.
Fuck you, dude.
Despite this, he asked for his coffin to be contained in cement and buried 10 feet deep because he was concerned that grave robbers would steal his body and use it for dissection.
Oh, that's really terrible for you.
I'd have been like, you know what we're going to do? We're just going to donate you to science so that you can get cut up and put on display like Burke and Hare.
Yeah.
So Holmes is, this is grotesque, but also kind of satisfying because he deserves this and 10 times more. His neck did not break when he was hanged. He instead strangled to death slowly, twitching over 15 Good. Minutes before he Torture. Was finally pronounced dead 20 minutes after the trap had been sprung.
Good.
Yeah. Frickin' riddance to you, honestly. Now, upon his execution, he was buried in an unmarked grave at Holy Cross Cemetery, which is located in a western suburb of Philadelphia called Yeadon, Pennsylvania.
Yeadon. Wait a minute. I've heard of that.
Have you?
Is that near Amish country?
Maybe.
I think it is.
Ooh. That's cool.
Anybody down there know?
It's unmarked.
Yeah.
We'd never find it. So I also wanted to clarify one thing because we talked briefly about like the Great Chicago Fire. Mm-hmm. And I had mentioned that it happened after Holmes's time, but I was wrong. And I got to the part in the book that sort of talked about that. It actually had happened. It had actually happened in 1871, which was like 20 years prior to these events.
It's probably where he got the ideas about the setting it off on fire.
Probably.
Because it was already happening in that area.
And the Chicago Fire was what triggered all this new, like, construction and this, you know, building these big new skyscrapers and things like that. So that was all from the Chicago Fire. So I'm sorry I was wrong about that. I wanted to issue that correction.
You're forgiven.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
So that was just an FYI. And again, the book that I used for a lot of my research was fantastic. It was called The Devil in the White City, and I will link it in the show notes for you guys. But it is a fantastic read. And again, it does go into the whole connection or thought to be connection or theory of Holmes being maybe connected to Jack the Ripper and like what all of that was involved with. So it was very interesting.
I wonder.
I know.
Thank you for that story, Kate.
Boy, that went faster than I thought it would.
So, thank you for listening, everybody. If you want to keep in contact with us, you know what's fun? We get a lot of messages.
We do.
And we reply.
I love them.
And everyone's like, I wasn't expecting a response back. And they get so excited. And I'm like,
but we love you and we try to reply to everything.
And then I'm like, I'm not a celebrity. No. I'll talk to you.
Yeah, no. Dude, let's meet for coffee. I want to hear all about your life.
Let's fly wherever. Tell us where you are. So, again, if you want to get in contact or follow us, you can follow us on Instagram at MedCrimesPodcast.
You can tweet us at MedCrimesPC.
You can search us on Facebook for MedCrimesPodcast.
If you wish to become a Patreon, you can visit www.patreon.com/MedCrimesPodcast.
With the musical interlude.
If you would.
You can email us any of your crazy stories, any of your ideas, any questions that you have at medcrimes@gmail.com.
We would love to hear from you guys.
We love it.
We hope you're staying safe out there.